Well, thank you guys so much for doing that episode.
Thanks
with
for
me.
Having us. Our it pleasure. Was so fun.
And now we're going to talk a little bit about musical improv and just
I haven't
like, nerd
done
out a little bit.
This podcast in years. Since,
well,
like,
you
the
were
very
the very
season.
First guest.
Was it the very first one, that When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah, that was the very first one, you and Angela.
Whoa,
it
iconic.
It was so fun.
Yes.
Iconic.
Yeah. I love this show. I love you and I love
I
your show.
I just made that connect. I should have said it in the intro. I should have said back from being on the very
That's
first
episode.
That's
so funny. I don't think I knew it was the very first one.
It was,
we
yeah.
did it
in
a
my
garage. It was Whoa. So hot.
Yes, it was like much worse.
It was
this
different.
Is much better.
It was very different.
It was
yeah.
just different. That's a good way to put it. But which just speaks to, I mean, your length of time doing musical improv and
I mean
being involved with it.
Yeah.
I wanna the question I ask everybody at the top is what brought you to musical improv and like what's been your journey with it so far? For you, that answer's Tara. For
it's
you,
long.
That answer's long. But
it
maybe
doesn't have to be though. I just did Susie's. Not to is are you competing? Susie's podcast, so you can
no,
get a very long
all.
Version
yes,
of this
and
answer.
And everyone should go listen to
if
Susie's.
If you go,
it,
if you go watch
yes
the
also.
Yes Also, I gave yeah. a 2 hour. That was a 2 hour. But you know,
yes, exactly.
I've been not to age myself. I don't feel old, but when you hear that I've been doing this 30 years, it probably suddenly makes you go that bitch is old. But I
damn
you know, damn
that bitch is old.
I was doing short form, you know, yeah. and I was in a show, and part of the short form show was songs, and I was not a great singer. I'm still not. You are both. Beautiful,
very,
beautiful
very
singers.
Nice.
But I love to sing, and I have no fear of it. And I think you don't have to be a great singer to be great at musical improv. And so I try to like I walk that walk. But I was not a good singer when I started. I could like I could hear it. I can hear when notes aren't good, but I couldn't change them. And so I'm also proof that if you do this a lot, you can get better at the stuff you're not great at. Like yeah. it's like anything, right? But I was doing musical improv and. We would do a full improvised musical as part of our short form show. We would get a ask the audience for a story and we would turn it into a musical. And it would be a solid, I don't know, 20 to 30 minute musical as part of an hour and a half long short form show. I put short form in quotes because we're still doing sometimes like 5 minute scenes and right. a long musical. And a bunch of us were doing UCB. And so it was like me, Eliza Skinner, John O'Donnell, a bunch of people from New York, and Michael Lovingwell. I don't know. There were a bunch of us that were like, oh, we want to do this, a long form version of this. And so we just started, you know, doing it at UCB and at the Magnet. And then at some point I was like, I said to Frank Spitznagel, who's just, he just passed away this last year. And the most brilliant person to ever live, musical piano player and musical theater director. And one day I said to him, I think we could teach this. I would love for more people to be doing this, because at the time it really was like Baby Wants Candy was in town, and it was just sort of this same, all of us were the same people. And he just was like, yeah, let's do it. And so I don't know, probably I want to say like 2007, I don't really know what year we started teaching it. 2007, 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. So then we started teaching it, and it just kept growing and growing.
Yeah.
There. So I've been doing it a long time.
And it's, I mean, would you say it's fair to say you were one of the first people to be teaching musical improv?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I mean, Eliza for sure too. And then Baby Wants Candy, they would do some workshops and stuff, but it was like more those of us in the cast of Baby Wants Candy, we would like get together and rehearse and we would do stuff. But like to teach like an actual, here is a 101 level class that
yeah.
is like, and that I was like thinking about what are the steps to build that are like 101, 201, 301, whatever that looks like. In New York for sure.
Yeah.
It was one of the first places and times that you could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like I get to be, you know, part of that lineage because you were the first musical improv teacher that I had.
Yeah.
Back in probably 15 or 16.
I mean, but yeah. And then you disappeared for a while.
Well, so basically for me, comedy and music, I kept really, really separate. And in fact, I'll go on record saying I was a musical improv hater, baby.
Ooh.
I was like, what do they fucking think they're doing up there? And what I realized was it was my own sense of fear of fusing those two things that I loved separately. I had fear that I wasn't going to be able to do it, right?
Yeah.
And so it came to a point where I was like, fuck, I have to do this. Like, I'm so afraid of it that clearly there's something to it. And in meeting you doing it, it
yeah.
kind of unlocked a lot of
not unlocked is the best word, but like any insecurity I felt about fusing the two was totally washed aside. And it led me on a journey to reconnect with music, and that brought me to travel a bit and then come back and do it some more. And so for me, the experience of taking the classes that you established kind of unlocked a whole creative world for me that I had felt pretty locked up about.
Yeah.
And now I'm a monster. Now
you
I'm
are a monster. I was so happy when you beast. Came back from Texas. Yeah. I was like, you don't belong in Texas.
Listen, I needed a break.
Yeah.
I had to go back to it, you know?
Yeah.
How about you?
Oh, I need to, sorry, I'm having a producer's mind for a
Oh, God, what happened?
I saw something weird on the thing, and I need to make sure one of your mics isn't crackling.
Okay. Oh, how no would you problem. Know if it, you can tell just by looking at the computer if the mic is crackling?
Yeah.
Is it mine
or
his?
Can you imagine?
Neither.
Okay.
Nothing's crackling.
No.
Do not edit this out. This is an important part of the process.
So, yeah, both of you came to it that way. And I love that. I want to ask what, you know, you're both so brilliant and you're both so good in this. I want to know, let's like do a little, it's so rare for players, usually you play a show and then you never talk about it again.
Yeah.
And I think there are things to learn from shows we do, like, you know, in the way football players watch their games. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we do it very often as musical improvisers. Mm-hmm. And I think this talk back is an opportunity to look, you know, 2020 vision, talk about what we're feeling awesome about and what
the
we really liked.
The show we just did?
Yes.
That's so interesting because on my Herald team, which I was on a Herald team at UCB for a very long time called Mother, and we used to rehearse twice a week.
Yeah.
And we played once a week and we got together and watched our shows.
Yeah.
And we watched, you know, when you think about like those, the people who are out there who are like just starting doing this, who are like taking a class once a week and then wanting to get on teams or wanting to whatever, like when I tell you I was on five teams, I was rehearsing every night, and my Herald team was together 3 to 5 nights a week, watching our shows back, talking about our shows. So that what you're talking about, we 100% did that.
Yeah, like but it's pretty rare now.
Yeah, it doesn't happen anymore. Like the work that we put in to become who we became, it was our whole entire lives. Yeah. And it was also not something anyone else was doing. Like our small group of people at UCB at that time were the only people really doing it in New York in that way. And so it's so valuable. And you know this, you both know this. I always tell my students, talk about what you love first.
Yes.
You cannot leave a show going, oh, I hated
this,
or
I messed
up this. You just didn't. Like improv doesn't, you just didn't mess it up. If you were going to do it differently, you would have done it differently.
Right. Yeah.
That said, I would have made my characters all have different voices because I do. I was like, oh, you're on a podcast, Tara. Dana and Eve should have much more distinctive voices. So you don't have to come in and be like, it's me, Dana. You know, or whatever.
Yes.
That's my note to myself.
Yeah, for me, it's always about like...
Start with something nice.
I love performing with you guys. It's such a joy. And it's so fun to watch you both who have clearly mastered this, right? You clearly have such
a
strong, you know, understanding and a craft and a technique to it. And so it's easy for me to go, well, shit, this is great. I'm just going to enjoy this shit and be the fucking cuck in the corner watching everybody perform. And I have to remind myself, like, no, like, I'm here. Like, I need to, you know what I'm saying?
That
like,
happens,
don't be part of it.
Does that happen to you where you suddenly are like, oh, I'm in this show. Like you're
but
watching people be funny and great. I do that all the time where I'll be like, oh, I've got
to
be in this show.
Right.
It happens to me if I'm on a show where I'm playing with a lot of aggro or not aggro. That's the wrong word. It really experienced players.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or and sometimes really aggro players. Like everyone's really getting out there. I'll be like, I'm having a great time.
Right.
I love watching it so as much as I love doing it to the point where sometimes I'll be on the back line and I'll go, oh. Right. You're not just watching. You have to also pay attention in a way that you're going to be in it at some point, too, especially when it's like narrative or something.
It's narrative shows. It's easy to end up on the back if you're not playing one of the two important, quote unquote, important roles.
Sure.
I really loved that Adam and Eve game of like, I love the game of like trying to be in a time and think of like 2011 is so, I was like, oh, what was I doing?
Think of a thing.
Yikes.
The only thing I could think of is I had just gotten married in 2010. And so I did have a sense of some things. Like I was like, that song, that Moves Like Jagger song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was really, really into it around the time of my wedding because I was like working out a lot. And so it was one of my workout songs.
Yes.
So I had in my mind, I'm like, oh, I know like 3 or 4 songs that are like the thing from that moment to me. But then I love like being like, I don't love comedy when it's anachronistic. Or yeah. It's if it's accidentally anachronistic, but when it's, you know, when you're not paying attention, and so you know, so it's like really having fun looking you in the eye to be like, what do we know about 2011? What do we know about 2017?
And if you go back to the record, you'll see that I truly had not a. I think I tried to do one. I think I had one in the chamber. I was like, yeah, like Carly Rae Jepsen. All right, let's move on.
Yeah. I thought that was fun, and then I thought the game of it where you went back three minutes so you could sing a song was so funny, Ryan.
To really me, there was a lot of fun kind of across the board with this idea of interruption, right? Because we start with, you know, your character technically interrupting us from having sex. Then I'm interrupting you guys sort of having your conversation about this thing.
Yes.
And then the time travel becomes its own sort of form of, like, how can we interrupt each other's sort of, like, right before, like, the confession, it felt like. You know what I mean? Yeah. Right before we were about to say, like, whatever it was our character
and,
wanted,
like,
it was
like. And, the phone keeps ringing and the door keeps knocking. Right. Yeah, yeah.
I think the thing I would take away as something I really liked was this sense of like grabbing onto a soft pitch and really, really running with it, especially early in a show, can be so helpful. Because I think really early on, you said, you literally like pitched two things on what the show could be. We had this first scene where we sort of laid out like a problem.
Yeah.
And it was like,
oh, yeah. I was like, oh, you were so, what, is there anything
I
can
do? What am I supposed to do? What can I do? And you were like, unless you can find a time machine or become a whole different person.
And that's what the whole show was.
And literally it was like, oh, so there are two pitches on what the show could be. It could be.
And it was both.
And it kind of ended up being both. But it's like, you know, like I could have been like, that second one, yes, I'll become a whole different person.
Right.
Let go of the, like, in other words, it's like you just do what sparks joy.
Yeah.
And so I loved this thing of like, that was like a soft pitch. I could tell you weren't like, okay, everyone, we're doing time machines.
Oh, no, I actually was like, there's nothing you can do. You'd have to have a time machine.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then it was like, I'm going to get a time machine. Yeah. And I saw your face, and I was like, when you did the doon-doon on the keys, I was like, oh, we're doing a time machine.
Hell yeah.
And I love that it was a BlackBerry on a patio. Take it. Now we can have friends over.
I've recently been doing a lot of cleaning in my apartment that I've been putting off, and so that feeling of freedom.
Well, it's very funny, like all the different versions of time. I like doing you know, these kind of improv is so fun that you can riff on culture, but like in a shorthand that everyone has.
Yeah.
And you don't have to like spend too long on it either in the way like sketches do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, doesn't have to be a ton of exposition because we're going to the shit out of what,
Like
we're
Time
in it.
Machine
we're
BlackBerry
in it.
Is like, as a sketch, is like so boring.
Because
it's like, oh, we have to do 30 jokes about this, and instead we can just be like, that was just funny, and now we're done with that. Yeah.
I love Craigslist and BlackBerries. It was like, I can't think of 2011, but I'm definitely going to do a bunch of 1999 stuff. Craigslist and BlackBerries.
It's true. I had nothing. The aughts
so
are
good.
So lost to me.
Well, they're just so, they're all the same. There's so little that's like, this is the thing of that.
Yeah. Thinking about as always in these shows, it's the accompaniment that often is the area where I'm like, oh, I could have been thinking. I felt like I was playing the same. I'm trying to mix it up more, and just coming back in the new year, I sort of was like, oh, I'm playing a lot of the same tunes over and over again. But so that was something that was on my mind. And then just losing track of it's always such a fine line. You want chaos because chaos is the joy.
Yeah.
And you have to like keep the work of like, anyway,
you have to tell the story. Yeah. You have to go to the next thing.
Keep trying to bring back the emotional stakes. Like you do the funny joke, and then it's like, we do a joke on a joke on a joke on a joke, and we all had so much fun. And then you have to go, right, but anyway, I love you.
Right. Like, oh, we're developing an MNRA. We've got to also tie these people somehow back to, you've got to all make it all connect while you're also really enjoying fucking with each other.
Yes.
Right. And not letting anything go. Like, you don't want anything to be at the end
chafe.
To go, oh, we didn't.
Yeah.
Chaff, we had that thing and it did it, and we never saw it again or whatever that was. Yeah.
So that was what I found myself thinking about was that sense of like, I think we balance both muscles. I wish I'd had a little more of like, keep the train on the tracks. And
see, but that's unfortunately never going to happen with me, mama.
See, I don't know if you know
her.
I
think a superpower of mine is like, I can play really emotionally. I can get super invested in like how I'm feeling about something. And my brain forgets details, even stuff that I put out in the world. And I think truly, you know, as I sort of look back on the play-by-play of it all, it's always a constant struggle of like, okay, without feeling too shoehorny or feeling like I have to like wrangle this bull back to a joke, how can I continue to keep the things that I've established up in the air, right?
Yes.
But oftentimes that's what teammates are for. You know what I mean? There's no I in team, baby. So it's
true.
Thank you for being a friend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I know what you're saying. It's like trying to remember your game.
Yeah.
It can be hard. Yeah. Like your character-y game that like is across the whole set.
Yeah.
Can be like hard when games come up.
When there's other shiny objects to look
yes.
at.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But you also can have a chaos. Well, you love to lean into chaos. You like joy in it.
It's fun, right?
Yeah.
It's fun. And like I think so much of improv can become hyper obsessive of like, oh, we've lost something, and it's like, then lose it. Keep losing it until the swirl comes into a shape again. And
well,
like,
people start to take it so seriously, right. And it's supposed to be fun. And so, you know, I always say, if you shit the bed and you're like jumping around and throwing it around and it's like, and you're having fun, I want to watch you have fun.
Yeah.
But if you shit the bed and then you go, oh no, then I'm going to feel that way, right? Like how you feel about it and how you show that you feel about it is how everyone's going to feel about it.
Yes, it's so true. You can almost watch the exact same set of moves played by a more experienced improviser and a less experienced improviser. And the more experienced improviser, the only reason it kind of feels like it works more is because there's all these subtle cues that they're not living and dying by inches with each move. That they're like, this, you know, I'm not bothered. That this is not, that nothing is happening
yet. Not only
am
I not bothered,
I'm
come on,
fun.
This
yeah.
is fun. Like,
yeah.
that's the fun of it, is that we just can be like, haha, whatever
right.
happens, happens. And if, like, you know, if at the end of it, it made no sense, but you watched us laugh at each other and enjoy
right.
each other and, like, look each other in the eye, I feel like there's that there's value in it. And, like, back in the day, John Daly used to be my roommate, and we were on a Harold team together, and we would sometimes have these, like, real long discussions about what it is. And he was all about, we made people laugh. It was a good show. And I was like, what about how we feel? How
right.
about, you know, and now I'm like really in a place where I'm like, it's all of the above, you know, but like to take it really seriously and think like, oh, but my art,
yeah.
you know, it's like at the end of the day, like we're here to be having fun. And if you're not having fun, the audience cannot have fun with
no,
you.
They
just
cannot.
Well,
especially in like a format like this, where you are sort of, you know, even, I don't want to say reducing it down, but the improv is all conceptual,
so personal,
right?
Yeah.
It's personal. You're right up next to each other, you know.
And
a
you're
lot
not
of things
moving
are,
around.
Exactly,
you're not dancing.
Exactly.
You're like, we are trying
right.
to communicate all of a musical
right.
in a chair with
yeah.
a, holding a microphone, which is, you
it's
know,
so
the format is so different.
Yeah.
I'm literally looking at your eyes in a mirror.
Right.
Yeah.
Does the audience know that from home, that that's how
yeah,
we're, that you're
can,
at a, that you're facing
oh, maybe
away
they
from
don't
me.
If they've never listened to the,
and
if
the,
they've only listened, yeah.
Yeah, and if I'm sitting in that chair, I'm, like, Philip has a mirror that he has taped
right.
To the front of his piano, and so we sit actually kind of behind and beside him, and we look him in the eye in a mirror.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
often
it's like
I'd be watching him perform, looking at the back of his head, like,
yeah.
as the character, and then I'd look
and you'd be like,
face.
Oh, he's looking
so
at me.
He's so handsome. I was like, he's looking at me.
Well, I'd be looking at your face, then I'd look over and be like, oh, he's singing right to me.
Yeah.
I could be looking him right in the eyes right now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I'm always only looking in your eyes, because
right.
obviously I can't see the back
yeah.
of my own head
right.
yet. yet. But, okay. So we have to close up. I know
yes.
we have to go to the zoo.
I'm going to the zoo.
Woohoo. I'm going to Walnut, California.
Is, that's a place?
Ever heard of it?
No.
I'm going to Brownie.
You wish.
I want to know.
By the way, selling Girl Scout cookies right now.
Oh
so
God.
This comes
the
out
hustle.
During. If this comes out
the
anytime
hustle,
in
dude.
February or early March, please
it's
reach
honestly,
out to me if you want
nice.
Girl Scout
cookies.
I can deliver them to you if you
cookies.
Live in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even joking.
The last thing I want to ask you guys about is like, what's on your mind in terms of like musical improv as a form, and like what you find yourself thinking about in terms of what you like, what's something you're working on, or what's something you're like hopeful about in the form?
Yeah,
you know,
for me,
feel free to be quite nerdy about it.
For me,
other
it's
players.
All about like, I think singing, but making music in general, but specifically singing and improvising are the two things that you can do to connect to your subconscious or your unconscious mind fastest.
Oh.
I think you peer into someone's mind when you see them sing, when you see them improvise, and when you combine the two of them, I think you get to immediately see a person's ability to sort of interact with the unknown. And for me, it's how can I interact with the unknown in a way that's friendly, that's welcoming, that's sort of against the physiology and biology of a human being, which is to approach the unknown as scary or different. And so I'm constantly trying to challenge myself of like, oh, here's an idea that I wasn't anticipating or that I myself didn't have. How do I welcome it and bring it into the fold and greet that with friendliness versus push it away or say no to it or reject the ideas? And I think that extends into life.
I love his multitudes. Thanks. He like walks in and he's like, I'm just a ditzy, sexy ditz head. And then he starts talking.
I would never describe myself as that, but I appreciate
you do a character that's like, oh, I love my life. But then you start talking and you are like the one of the smartest people. And I told this to you before. Yeah. He's so smart.
He's so smart.
He's really contained so many multitudes, this person right
two.
Here.
Two multitudes.
Sex crave, really smart person.
What about you, Sarah?
Oh my gosh.
What are you thinking about or maybe it can be struggling with, or maybe it can be like excited or interested in the form or in your own growth with it.
I mean, it's like it's really, really true. I watch people do this so much, and I teach it and I'm coaching it. I am learning things all the time about myself and about other people. And I find it, you know, there are certain trends that are fascinating where you're like, oh, everyone is doing this one thing right now. Huh. And it's like a weird, like almost like a bad habit or like a crutch that everyone is falling on. And so then I'm like, okay, here's the thing. As I coach and I teach, I'll go, here's the thing I'm seeing all the time. Let's work away from that. Let's go against that. So like Ashley calls it a pitch fest, like opening numbers where all eight people step out and sort of stand in a line and start pitching and they stop listening. And what I really am into right now and really love is the idea of two things, attack, which is like do not let anything get by you. Do not let anything get said that you do not hear, and show me that you hear it. And I mean that, show me. That's the other thing I'm really into. Show me, you don't have to tell me that you heard it. Show me that you heard it, because react to it. And reactions are not words. Reactions are literally right now, you are reacting to me. I can feel that you are listening to me, right? I know that you are listening to me. And so I saw Jeff Goldblum give this talk a couple of months ago at the Academy Museum. He was like, he got to pick any of his movies to show, and he chose Nashville, which is fascinating. I'd never seen it, and I really wanted to see it. He does not speak in that movie. By the way, if you've never seen Nashville, what a fascinating movie. It's so interesting. It's so long. But he doesn't speak in the movie, and he talked about how he had all these like acting teachers and directors talk about him as an actor and how good he is at listening. And I've been thinking a lot about that, listening, because I've been teaching kids a lot and they're not great listeners, you know, and like what it means to react and listen and how to listen in a way that is reacting and do not let anything go by. And the truth is, when things go by you, it's because you're thinking of what you're going to say, or you're planning how you're going to react because you didn't hear the whole sentence all the way through, or you didn't really. And I really want to figure out how to keep unlocking that for people, that ability to really, truly, truly, truly listen without planning and thinking and to let the thing become it can become so weird and so strange and so fun, and that's that mess that you can live in, right? I keep saying lately, food fights are only fun for the people in them. Their food fights are only fun for the people throwing food at each other. The people who don't want to get dirty or who think you're breaking the rules or who we shouldn't treat food this way or judging or whatever, that is not, those people are not having a good time in a food fight. That if you can just think of like improv as like a food fight that's fun when we all throw food at each other and we aren't afraid to get a little messy or whatever. And I say that in my notes to students all the time. I want you to get a little messy. I want you to play in the mud. I want you to get a little silly because I can feel the sort of seriousness with which you are taking it.
Societal conditioning of your whole life.
Your whole life. Yeah. You are trained to take things and to be right and to be wrong and to, you know.
And just the comfort too of like, feeling confident that we don't, like a human mind doesn't need a lot to create a connection to it. You know what I'm saying? So when you create a scene like a food fight, all these dynamics can be happening, and maybe you're only throwing tomatoes, but from
you're,
an audience's perspective, so much can be
you're
built
still
on that
in
tapestry.
There. I'm sorry, but the class president is going to participate in the food fight differently than the class clown. But but the participation is what's going to make that fun. Yeah. How you participate is what's and or if you were me as a child, you would have stood there and just cried the whole time because it scared you and you knew it was wrong, but you wouldn't go rat it out to the teacher because you want to be a you want to fit in, you want to be a part of it. And so it's like a just like that idea of like how do you keep unlocking that for people you're always still going to be in there.
It's also why, you know, improv gets this like cult philosophy to it, because the skills you develop and are challenged on in improv, in classes, in shows, in connecting with other people, are the same skills that make you a better listener, a better partner, a better friend.
Life skills.
Yeah, very like life skills that we don't spend a lot of time developing outside of usually our most intimate partnerships.
Yeah.
So it's strange sometimes to develop them on a live wire in front of other people on stage. I think that's where a lot of the reason people are so drawn to it is that they can feel their interpersonal ability to connect strengthening because it is an anti-ego exercise.
Yes, it's not a team. It's a team sport, not an ego sport. I've taught this in law schools, in business schools, in Fortune 500 companies. I've used improv. I've had students come to me and say, it's changed the way I interact with my children. All these business schools started hiring improvisers to come teach their year one classes because they realized they were graduating the most brilliant business minds in the country, but they didn't know how to make eye contact with people. They didn't know how to actually be in a room and connect, and that human connection is one of the most valuable skills that you can have in this world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
And then sometime we're going to have to get into, because I, and maybe we have time right now, I don't know, but this sense of should you leave anything behind in a scene? Because I'm actually a proponent of a middle ground where I see students so terrified to let go of somebody said something with a slight, they accidentally said it a certain way, and that has to become the game of the scene.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's not really what I mean. I don't mean get a dog, not get the bone in your mouth and never drop the bone.
Yeah.
But if the bone is there, you've got to acknowledge the bone.
You have to hear it. Yeah.
You have to show
even
that.
Even if hearing it is letting it go. Like, you know, oh, they accidentally said it this way. It's like, oh, well, I know you meant this. And,
yeah.
and then you fold in and move on. But it's the audience can feel everything that is not acknowledged, and it becomes like a psychic weight.
Yeah.
Because then you're not listening either, because all you're doing is thinking about the thing that you're trying to always bring it back to, right?
Yeah.
And it's a matter of like always being, you're always going with the current, but you can't ignore when there's a wave or when there's a rock or whatever, right? That's what I mean. Like, I think both of those things fit together perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything I see it as too? like a skateboarding. You know what I mean? You get on the board and you just cushion, baby.
It's like, you know
like
me.
Wave.
I'm always with the metaphor.
But
you're always
adjusting a little
Anything
bit.
Else you guys want to add before we...
No,
before?
You are delightful
thank
and
you,
that was wonderful.
Oh,
and I had
you.
So much fun.
What
thank you for asking me to do this with you, Ryan.
My pleasure.
Thanks for doing it, guys. Have a great day.
Yay!
Love ya.
See you at the Zoom. It's Girl Scout cookies.
Gotta get the last word.
Cookies, baby.
JK. I mean, I know I really do have them.
Yeah, I understand. I'll take some.